Hello and welcome to the Vermilion Sports Show here on KRVS 88.7 FM. I am your host, Louis Prejean. I am also the sports editor for the Vermilion, the student newspaper of UL. I'm here with sports writer Charles Long. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, how's it going? Going well.
It's going well?
Yeah. Trade day is pretty crazy.
Oh, trade deadline.
NBA.
In case you did not know, the NBA trade deadline was today. It ended at 2 p.m., 3 p.m. Eastern time. And it was crazy because, you know, the Cavaliers just traded away all their players.
They blew up their whole roster.
It was beautiful.
It was pretty crazy.
That's actually the dream scenario that, like, you wanted as a Cavs fan. Just blow the entire roster
with how they've been
up.
Playing recently, definitely.
In case this is your first time listening, this is the Vermilion Sports Show on KRVS 88.7, where we talk about the latest in Ragin' Cajun's athletics. We will talk about basketball, softball, and more. We also like to talk about national sports. The New Orleans Pelicans, Saints, and anything else like the NBA trade deadline.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big deal.
One of the craziest that I think
I've so funny
seen in years.
Everyone was expecting this one to be like so, you know, mellow, like nothing was really going to really happen. And then all of a sudden, all these reports are coming out of nowhere that the Cavaliers are trading all over the place. And within a 45-minute span, I'm pretty sure they blew up their whole roster.
No one was safe.
No,
in Cleveland.
No one.
Not the concession workers. Probably, I mean, I thought Ty Lue was going to get traded at some point, but, I mean, they just complete overhaul. Exciting to see what they're going to do now. I like the direction that they're going in right now. But let's talk about Cajuns. Cajuns basketball, the men's and women's team, they traveled to play against ULM. We'll start with the women's basketball team. The Cajuns earned their largest margin of victory against ULM in their matchup history, when they won by 28 points in a 76-48 blowout win. Great offense, great defense.
Absolutely.
Mixture of both. I mean, just great win overall. Let's look at the box score. Jasmine Thomas led the team in scoring and assists with 13 points and 7 assists. Thomas also had 5 steals in the game. Great hands. Simone Fields led the bench in scoring with 12 points on 6 of 9 shooting from the field. The team overall shot 52% from the field, 7 of 13 from 3. They had 17 assists, 13 turnovers. Something we did talk about last week was that they weren't producing as many assists as they were turning the ball over, and that is a big issue for the ball movement. That,
yeah.
That's just something we talked about.
Their offense has been struggling recently. I remember last week, I think, in the 2 games against the Alabama teams that they played, when they played against South Alabama and Troy, I think both games, they were both home games, and both games they shot under 40% from the field. They were both in the 30s. I think one was like 31, 33, something like that. So we had been saying, like, this team, if they want to start going somewhere, they need to start getting their offense rolling. And this was a really good sign that they can start doing that, start playing more, you know, efficiently from the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah. Their defense is not the problem.
Not at all.
It's their offensive production. They weren't getting it done. They weren't getting contributions or major contributions consistently from the players. So their defense isn't the problem. The defense held ULM to 32% shooting, 2 of 18 from 3. They forced 15 turnovers. So really, the defense stepped up once again, but the offense showed up, which was important in this win.
It's always nice to see a positive assist-to-turnover ratio. You always like to see when you have more assists than turnovers. I think that's a good sign that you're going to win a ball game. But, I mean, 17 assists in that game, you knew that they were passing it, they were finding open shooters, and that led to 52% shooting from the field. You know, when you find the open looks, you're going to get easy buckets, and that's what they were doing against ULM.
And you're talking about the shooting, the 7 of 13 from 3 is important, too, because they were taking a lot of three-pointers. We talked about earlier in the season for this Cajuns women's team, they weren't taking a lot of threes, and when they did take a lot of threes, they weren't making them. So this is a good number to be at, 13 attempts.
Yeah.
Because it leaves you open to, if you're missing your threes, you didn't really cost your team any points because you didn't jack up a lot of threes. But if you're efficient, then great. Seven three-pointers out of 13. It's great. So you don't really hurt yourself from the three-point line when
this
you take that many attempts.
This is the second game, I think I remember, recently with the Cajuns women's team. This season, where they've had a nice three-point shooting percentage, and they've taken plenty of shots as well. And I think in both those games they've won. And, I mean, this game against ULM was a huge blowout. So when they start to get their shot from the three-point line, if they get open looks, I say take them. And once they start to make them, then they start feeling more confident in those shots, and then they start to fall in more often, and that leads to wins. So
I mean, I like them at that moderate
Yeah, 13 level. Is fine.
13 is fine. I want to see them in the 13, 15. I don't want to see them in 18 to 20.
This team's not going to drop like 80 a game. They're going to play solid defense, get open looks, and that's how that's their formula for winning.
Right. I wrote about on thevermillion.com that they're dropped in offensive production from last season, but their defense has improved.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a positive. Now let's look at the women's trip to Georgia. They played Georgia State. Again, this radio show is recorded on Thursday. What time is it right now?
It's 4:30.
4:30. So the game's underway right now, actually. So they play Georgia State, 5-17 Georgia State. Then they will play 4-18 Georgia Southern on Saturday. Georgia State, you know, they scored 63 points a game. They give up 73. That game. So let's look at Georgia Southern on Saturday. Southern, 1-10 in conference play. They score 54 points a game. They give up 70. I mean, what are you expecting from this Georgia trip overall for the women's team?
I mean, neither one of these teams are really that good. And I think we've been talking about for a long time now that once we get into conference, we can start to get on a roll with the women's team. And right now, actually, as of now, the Cajuns women is up 27-20 in the second quarter. It's a good start. Both these teams, Georgia State and Georgia Southern, aren't that great. I think Georgia Southern in particular has lost 15 of their last 16 at the time of this recording. I think Georgia State's also on a down stretch. These are two teams that aren't good. They're about the same level of basketball that ULM plays for women's basketball. So I think if we can pick up these two wins, it'll be a nice two easy road wins to get us back over 500, back feeling good about ourselves, and back into conference contention.
Would you say these games against these Georgia teams aren't necessarily as must-win as that ULM game was?
I think the ULM game was a must-win because they came off with two losses.
Right.
But I also think that these two games are must-wins because we can start to get the ball rolling. If we can all of a sudden get on a three-game losing streak after those two bad losses at home, I say bad losses, but South Alabama's a really solid team.
South Alabama's a great
team. I think they're the best team in the Sun Belt for women's. Troy was kind of a bad loss, but they're kind of in the middle of the pack, just like UL, so it's kind of understandable.
Right.
But if we can pick up these two wins and start to get, you know, a win streak starting to build, I think that would be great for the confidence of these players.
I mean, yeah, these are still must-win games for the Cajuns women's team.
I think so.
Against Georgia. You need to come back after two straight losses. You need two straight losses at home. That's demoralizing right there. It's not just two straight losses. It's two straight losses
in both those games. As we were saying, they shot under 40% from the field. Their offensive production was just, you know, stagnant.
Right, and for this team that's hovering around the 500 mark to win three straight, to come back home and play a Texas State at UT Arlington, that's important right now. So these Georgia games are important. I mean, how do you see them go? Are these wins?
I think so. I think Gary Broadhead, Coach Gary Broadhead, will have them ready to pick up these two wins, get a win streak going. I think he's really emphasizing that these are the wins that we need to take over teams that aren't as good as we are. So I think that the Cajuns women's will go in and take both these wins.
Right. Broadhead coached teams know how to win. Three straight 21 teams. He'll have them prepared for this Georgia trip. Now, let's look at the Louisiana men's basketball team. They improved to 20-3 on the season, 10-0 in conference, 10-game winning streak with a 80-59 win over ULM.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is there much to say about this game against ULM? It's kind of like
they did their job.
This is what's expected. You know, this was expected. Let's move on into the tough stretch of Georgia. But, I mean, against ULM, everyone just kind of did what they do. Bartley, 22 points. Malik Marchetti, 4-5 from 3, 17 points. Washington, 12 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists. Point guard, Bryce Washington, as we point forward. Jakina Gant also had 14 points with 6 blocks.
And four blocks in the first 8 minutes. That's crazy.
Right. And again, you know, we can't really talk about the Georgia State game because it's going to happen right after we get out of the studio here at KRBS. I mean, so against ULM, the team shot 54% from the field, 9-20 from 3, 23 assists, which, is a staple of the Cajuns men's
offense.
See
it all day. Every single game that we were talking about, the Cajuns are dishing out assists left and right. I think that this is a really solid game. I think Stroman had 7 assists in this game. He didn't have
I think he had
1 point or something like that. But he was dishing out great assists. He's back in, I think, number 23rd in the country for assists per game. The Cajuns had a great game against ULM. We were talking about this potentially being a trap game. if they were caught looking ahead to the Georgia trip with Georgia State and Georgia Southern, and that this ULM team was 4-6 at home as compared to, I think, 0-11 on the road. So they play better ball at home, but the Cajuns still went in and beat them down. And I think that just shows how, you know, humbled they are, that they don't expect to just go and beat this team. Like, you still have to play the game, and I think they did do that against ULM.
Right, that mentality.
Absolutely.
They have a certain winning mentality right now.
There's no team that they overlook.
Right. Let's talk about the Georgia trip for the Cajuns men's team, because it's important.
Mm-hmm.
Toughest stretch of the season right here. The Louisiana men's basketball team, they play 18-6, 9-2 in the Sun Belt Georgia State team. They play them on Thursday. Then let's look at the Georgia Southern team, 16-8, 7-1 at home. They play them on Saturday. Georgia State, you know, they forced 16 turnovers a game, turned the ball over only 11 times a game, led in scoring by DeMarcus Simmons, 20.9 points per game.
He's a beast.
Outstanding scorer. And I think he's 20 points a game, 25-5 kind of guy.
He's I highlighted this in my preview for the Georgia State game, that he's basically like their little mini Russell Westbrook, where he puts up over 20 a game, but he also puts up over five rebounds per game and almost five assists per game. So he pretty much does everything for Georgia State. He's an absolute stud.
And we don't know how this game went, but one important matchup to look out for is Frank Bartley guarding DeMarcus Simmons.
Absolutely. Frank Bartley typically goes against the opponent's top guard on defense, and he did that against South Alabama with Roderick Sykes. And Roderick Sykes is averaging like 20 a game. I think he dropped 31 against Georgia State earlier this season. He dropped 38 against Troy earlier in the season as well. So the guy can score, but when Frank Bartley was on him, he held him to 1-10 shooting in Lafayette. So I think that Frank is going to have to, you know, expend a lot of energy on Simmons, because Simmons is just that type of guy.
But
he's
the Cajuns'
a great
offense
player.
Is so balanced that it's
exactly.
Okay if Bartley has kind of an off night on offense.
We always talk about how deep this team is, and they do have like five to six players that can drop double-digit points every night. So I think that they'll be more reliant on those other players than Frank Bartley for the offensive load, because I think Bartley's going to have to expend a lot of energy on defense to cover this guy. But I think that'll be okay.
Yeah, I think so. Matchups to look out for in this game, it's DeMarcus Simmons against Frank Bartley.
Yes.
Also watch out for Devin Mitchell. He hit 10 threes.
Yeah, Doug Mitchell is an Alabama transfer. I think he's averaging 12 a game, and he just had a monster game. He had a
38
crazy
points,
yeah,
10 three-pointers.
Unbelievable
so
game.
It's important, the Frank Bartley, DeMarcus Simmons matchup, the rebounding matchup,
mm-hmm.
because Georgia State is last in the conference in rebounding. Louisiana's first.
Mm-hmm.
So that's important to look out for.
Right.
And how this offense attacks that Georgia State defense.
Georgia State is really focused on playing a zone defense, kind of similar to how Jim Boeheim and Syracuse run their defense with a zone. And I think that usually when UL plays them, they struggle with Coach Ron Hunter for Georgia State's defense. But I think this year, with the addition of point guard Marcus Stroman, who's, you know, a great passer, as we've already illustrated, I think that we can attack the zone. But I think it's really key for the Cajuns to get off to a fast start in this game and don't let Georgia State settle in.
Right. I agree.
You want to attack them early.
Let's look at the game that we can predict. We can predict this game. The one against Georgia Southern, the Louisiana men's basketball team, they will play Georgia on Saturday. Georgia Southern scores 75.8 points per game, holds teams to 67 points a game. They're led in scoring by Tookie Brown at 19 points a game. Two other scorers that average over 10 points a game. Brown, he's a great shooter.
Mm-hmm.
55% from the field, 48% from three, and 77% from the free throw line. So be on the lookout for him. Great shooter. What are your thoughts against Georgia Southern for the game?
Georgia Southern is an interesting team because they started off very strong in the season. They kind of came out of nowhere. They just blasted off. And much more recently, they've been grounded. I think they've lost three of their last five. But as we've been saying, they're 7-1 at home, right? So this is a good home team. This is a team that plays well at their place. So the Cajuns, you know, can't look past this team either. And I don't think they will. I think they'll come in, whether they lose tonight against Georgia State or win, I think they'll come in and try to get this win as well.
Yeah. Out of the two Georgia games, this is the more winnable one, obviously.
Absolutely.
So this is if they were to lose against Georgia State, I expect them to bounce back against Georgia Southern. Mm-hmm. And if they were to win against Georgia State, I still think they continue their win streak through the Georgia trip.
The Sun Belt's interesting because I feel like there's, like, certain tiers.
Right.
You know, UL's on top because they're 10-0 in the Sun Belt. Then right below them is Georgia State, who's trying to get up to the top to be right there with UL. And then below them is Georgia Southern and Texas State. And I guess you could put Texas Arlington in there as well. And then after that, there's just a drop-off, right? So, I mean,
big drop-off.
Yeah, this is definitely a huge trip for the Cajuns basketball team. I highlighted it that this would probably be the toughest two-game stretch of the season.
The only time they'll meet this season.
Exactly. And you got to get these wins. So you got wins over these opponents going into the tournament, the Sun Belt tournament, of course. And when you look at it, the only other super tough stretch we've had this season on the road was that Texas trip. And that Texas trip, we started off slow against UTA, but came back in the second half, and then we just blew out Texas State. And I think that's going to be something similar to what this trip is going to be. I feel like the men's basketball team is going to start off slow against Georgia State, and then they're going to come back and win in the second half. And then I think they're going to have a much easier game against Georgia Southern.
Right. So do you have them 2-0 in this Georgia trip?
I predicted at the start of the season, or around, you know, week, around game five of the conference.
A couple weeks ago.
A couple weeks ago. That they would run the table in the conference, and I'm sticking with it. I see a lot of good things from this Cajuns team, and if they go 2-0, there's nothing stopping them from running the table.
Most important player in the Georgia trip.
You know, that's interesting because I feel like Stroman's going to have to be really important, of course, in the Georgia State game to be able to be dishing out assists. I think Bartley's going to be really important in that game as well. I think Bryce Washington is probably my most important player. As you were highlighting, I think he's going to have a monster weekend. I think if there's any time for him to have a monster weekend, it's this weekend. And as you were highlighting, Georgia State's not a good rebounding team. I think that he can, you know, have a 16 to 18 rebound type of game against them. But I think that he's going to have double doubles in both these games. I think he's going to have a monster performance this weekend.
My player is Jakinan Gant.
Yeah.
I think he's going to have a great weekend. I think one of these games, it feels almost like he's going to put up 30 in one of them. I just see it. I don't know. I think he's going to bring his high motor, his high efficiency into the Georgia trip because, as you said, this team is humbled and they're focused. So they're not taking these light.
If there's any game for him to drop 30, it would have to be that Georgia State game.
Oh, man. Well, I mean,
that'd be great timing.
We'll see. Well, I mean, we would have seen by now how that goes. So, I mean, I'm excited for this Georgia trip because it's going to say a lot about this team. It's going to say a lot about the conference where Louisiana stands in the Sun Belt Conference because right now they're dominant.
Right.
They're dominant. They're winning by like 20 points a game. So, 10-0. All right, let's talk about other Cajun sports. Cajun softball began on Thursday, and they will have played six games by the time Sunday ends. That's a busy schedule.
Yeah, definitely.
I can't imagine.
Six games in 3 days.
Oh, man, my legs would hurt. You know, like when I run on the treadmill. Recently, I've been doing that, you know, a little more cardio. And, you know, just my knees, you know, kind of hurt a little bit.
Yeah.
I think I had a shin split, man.
Do you stretch before?
No, I don't.
Oh, you should probably do that.
Good advice. And, you know, so I couldn't imagine playing six games
in three days.
God. Yeah. Then, Cajuns baseball starts next week on February 16th when they play three games against Texas. Charlie, I know you're excited about Cajuns baseball.
Baseball is back, and I could not be happier.
Oh, man. We're going to talk about that next week, Cajuns baseball. It's going to be
exciting. Softball's back, too, man. Softball's been great recently, and hopefully they can keep it up this year.
National Signing Day happened. Cajuns football, a lot of great signees. I mean, a lot's going on in Cajun sports. Let's keep talking about the Louisiana men's tennis team. They have now won four consecutive wins to improve to 6-4 on the season, while the women's team improves to 6-1 after weekend competitions. The men's team earned 4-3 wins over both UTSA and, please say it, Charlie.
Incarnate Word.
Incarnate Word.
Incarnate Word.
I jumble over those words. I do not know why.
It's strange.
There's just some things that you can't pronounce.
Yeah.
I know there's got to be a word out there for you that you just can't pronounce.
Not that I can think of off the top of my head.
Regularly.
Regularly.
I said that pretty fine.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's got to be some words.
There's some tongue twisters out there.
They'll pop up.
Yeah.
Incarnate Word. Word. All right, there we go. The Cajuns women's team improved to 6-0 at the season after wins against Xavier, but dropped to 6-1 after only two singles matches wins against Louisiana Tech. The Louisiana men's tennis team will compete again on February 10th against Old Dominion University, while the women's team takes on
Incarnate Word.
Thank you. I should just have you as a filler. We should just record that and I could press a button. They will take on Incarnate Word on February 9th, then Texas A&M on February 10th. The Cajuns golf team starts their spring semester on February 12th when they compete in the Mobile Sports Authority Intercollegiate in Alabama. The Raging Cajuns track and field teams, they wrapped up another week of competition with some impressive performances at the LSU Bayou Bengal on February 2nd and the Jaguar Invitational on February 4th. Let's talk about these performances right now for the track and field teams. Senior sprints and relays athlete, Gerald Brazil. I kind of want to say, Gerald Brazil set a school record for his time in the men's indoor 60-meter dash at the LSU Bayou Bengal. Brazil recorded a time of 6.55 seconds in the 60-meter dash for a school record.
Excellent. Excellent. Excellent performance.
And Tisse Woodhouse, my oh my.
I feel like we talk about her every week.
Because every week she's setting a school
Unbelievable.
Record. Unbelievable. Oh, my. She set another school record in the women's indoor weight throw. This is Woodhouse's third time this season setting the record with a throw of 61 feet 5 inches at the Jaguar Invitational. They're going to have to put me out on – I want to do like a practice run.
Yeah.
Throwing the weight throw just to see.
See how far you could get
There's no way I'm getting 61 feet. But
absolutely not.
I want to see how much it weighs.
I mean, there's no way I'm running a 60-meter dash in 6.55 seconds either. So.
No way. That's why we talk about sports. The performance earned Woodhouse a first-place finish in the event at the Jaguar Invitational. Again, two school records set by Cajuns athletes. So, amazing performances by them.
Absolutely.
Now let's talk. That was a Rage of Cajuns talk right there.
There's one last thing.
Okay.
I got a halftime update for the UL-Georgia State game. And they're up 46-30 on Georgia State at halftime.
They're scoring.
Great offensive performance so far, just like we were saying.
Yeah, they're on pace to only give up 60 points, too, and you hold teams under. Great scoring,
though. That's how you
win. Check that out. Their offensive production. My article is going to be really irrelevant. Well, it will not age well by the time the season ends.
Yeah.
When I talked about the drop in offensive production on thevermillion.com. This is the Vermillion Sports Show on KRVS 88.7 FM. That was Rage of Cajuns talk. We'll talk about the New Orleans Pelicans right now.
There's a lot of interesting stuff with the Pelicans.
The 28-25 New Orleans Pelicans, the eighth seed in the Western Conference right now for the Pelicans. A lot can change, honestly. And they had the week we expected but not expect, I guess you would say, because they went on the road to beat the Thunder, 114-100. Which, Charlie, you always make the joke like, hey, we're going to win like the tough game, but we're
going
to lose
the easy games. Like the other week when we had that the Rockets game and the Kings game in the same week, I'm like, the Rockets game is going to be the one we lose, and then we're going to lose the Kings. And that's exactly what happened. I think I was saying that Anthony Davis was going to have a 40-point like killer night that would give us a huge win. He did that against the Thunder.
Exactly what happened. Exactly. But then they lost 118-107 to the Timberwolves.
The Timberwolves have beat us every time we've played them this year.
And they swept the season, the season series. So that's it for the Timberwolves and Pelicans. Just not a good matchup.
Not at all.
Definitely not a team.
Andrew Wiggins and Jimmy Butler are awful matchups for the Pelicans.
Because they're great wings, and the Pelicans do not have any wing players.
Solomon Hill, help us, your only hope.
He's coming back soon. There's a lot going on with the New Orleans Pelicans. They lost 133-109 to the Utah Jazz at a game that I went to. I was at this game, Charlie.
Yep, you sure were.
Man, they put up a lot of points.
It wasn't even like Donovan Mitchell or anything.
It wasn't Donovan Mitchell. It wasn't really Rudy Gobert. Like, Rudy Gobert in that game was more of kind of a decoy because he would set the pick at the top, roll to the basket, and the Pelicans were so worried about the lob to Gobert or the pass to Gobert, they let Ricky Rubio and Joe Ingles just put up floaters right into the basket. Oh, man, that game. There's no defense in that game. But I did see Rajon Rondo put up four threes.
I'm pretty sure the Jazz had 100 points on us by the third quarter.
Definitely.
And they're the Jazz. Like, they're not the team that you expect to blow you out on offense. Like,
Rodney Hood came off the bench and scored 30 points.
I think he was 12 of 14 as well. But
Rodney Hood is no longer
when
with.
When you think of the Jazz, you think of a team that's going to play great defense,
yes.
A team that's going to grind you down, and a team that's going to get wins based off of their good shots. But they just kept shooting, and they kept making them.
Yeah.
Well,
right.
It was unbelievable.
Great offense by Utah, bad defense by the Pelicans. You know, the Pelicans are just one of the worst teams in the league in defense.
Absolutely.
So they're going to give up 100 a night to any team in the league. That's right. Just what's going to happen.
Right.
I mean, it's aggravating. I mean, the game was still fun, though.
Yeah, I'm sure
it was.
I got
a nice hoodie. You know, I ate a lot of food, so it was a good time. Then we expected a game against the Indiana Pacers on Wednesday, but that didn't happen. Why didn't it happen, Charlie?
Wasn't it like roof leakage?
It was roof leakage.
You know, it's funny. I saw on Twitter the Pelicans tweet at the Pacers. They're like, hey, so y'all want to go catch a parade or something? And then the Pacers' Twitter account was just like, I'm so down.
Okay.
It's funny. So apparently funny. The Pelicans and Pacers' Twitter accounts are both friends.
That's good. That's good to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Pacers
Can you give us Victor Oladipo, please?
Had to be postponed due to a leak in the Smoothie King Center. I mean, it was about 2 hours in until they decided to cancel the game.
Yeah.
And so to postpone it, I mean, okay, so we got three games for the New Orleans Pelicans this week. It was a win against Thunder, two losses to Timberwolves, Utah Jazz. What's your reaction?
I mean, I was half expecting us to lose all four of these games, but, you know, with the three games that we played, going into it, you may expect, you know, one and two, maybe even 0-3, 2-1 at best, and that's if we would have picked up the win against the Jazz. But 1-2 was pretty, you know, understandable. You kind of expected it. I think that I'm excited to see what Mirotić is going to bring to this team. I think he had a good first couple games, and then
he had a great first game. He had a great debut. He dropped 16 and 10 off the bench.
Yeah.
In his debut,
and he laid an egg against the Jazz.
He didn't do much against the Jazz,
but that's okay. I mean, he's still getting fit into the offense. I think that he's going to be actually a great small ball, you know, big, which is kind of like what Alvin Gentry likes to run. So that should be interesting to see how he develops with our offense. But, you know, giving up 133 to Utah, you hate seeing that.
Oh, man.
Yeah, if you look at this, they gave up over 100 points in each of these games. The only game they won was when they held OKC to 100.
They still gave up
100.
It was a good win, though.
It was absolutely a good win.
And you know why
Davis,
they got that win?
Anthony Davis.
But a great showing in the third quarter. Because they're terrible in the third quarter.
Which is something, you know, that's literally what I was just thinking. It's something so funny because we always talk about how bad they are in the third quarter. Like, what halftime adjustments does this team make?
Zero.
It's unbelievable.
They actually make, like, D adjustments, or I don't know if there's a word for that, but they don't do – Gentry probably gives them bad advice and then goes out there and they don't do anything.
It's unbelievable how – I think they lost 9 straight third quarters going into that Thunder game, and then they won that Thunder game's third quarter, but then they lost the next two, if I'm correct. So they just can't win the third quarter. As soon as they start off fast, get a lead at the half, they always blow it immediately, and then they're fighting for the lead back in the fourth quarter. And that's not how you're supposed to win. As soon as you get the lead, you want to step on the opponent's throats and extend the lead. Instead, they just, you know.
The biggest mystery of the New Orleans Pelicans, what is being said at halftime?
I don't know. I know that after the Jazz game, the general consensus was that the Jazz played a great game and that there was nothing the Pelicans could do. And, man, is that a bad mindset.
You never
want to have that mindset. You always want to, you know, no matter how good a team is playing, you want to play better, right?
Exactly.
That's supposed to be a team's mindset.
If you're giving up 133, you're putting up 134.
Exactly. But instead they were just like, oh, they had a great game. There was nothing we could do. I think that's on the coaching, personally. But, you know.
I know. Aaron Gonsolin, Sports.NewsWire for the Vermillion, is not with us today. Could not make it to the studio. He would defend his boy, Alvin Gentry, right now. He would defend him, but he's not here, so he cannot. Wow.
I'll just be straight up. I think that's on coaching. With that mindset,
it is. It always falls on the coach. Whether it comes to team chemistry, team mindset, team anything, it falls on the coach.
They just need to have better halftime adjustments and have more of a killer instinct. Have more of a we're going to go into this game and win, not if they go into a game and they start losing immediately, they need to get back into the game and not just think, oh, this team's playing a really good game, let's just lay it down and take the loss.
Right. Let's talk about the Pacers game, or the non-game that happened before that game. the Pelicans were going to bring Rajon Rondo off the bench, and they were going to start DeAndre Liggins
at the two guard, I'm assuming.
Right. What are your thoughts about that? I mean, maybe DeAndre at the three.
That could be interesting. I think as soon as Solomon Hill gets back, he's our bona fide three starter.
Right.
But I think that DeAndre Liggins at the two and Drew Holiday at the one is a really solid defensive backcourt. And what does this team need?
Defense.
Rajon Rondo provides a good spark of offense. And coming off the bench, he could help find open players, get some points off the bench in the second quarter and the third quarter.
I think statistically, the Pelicans are worse on defense with Rondo on the court.
Yeah, he's not a great defensive player. He's good at passing, but he's not a great defensive player, as I was just saying. I think Drew Holiday. Yeah, I mean, he's kind of getting old.
Yeah, he's getting up there.
Yeah, but I think that would be interesting.
Drew Holiday and DeAndre Liggins would make for a great
defensive backcourt. Yeah.
It's just when it all comes down to on the offense, you know, DeAndre Liggins, not the offensive player, but it would have to come down to Drew Holiday being aggressive.
Right.
And that's always a concern because he's not always the aggressor. So
he had a good game, I believe.
Against the Utah Jazz.
Yeah, against the Jazz.
He put up 30.
Yeah.
So
we need to see that more.
Another Pelicans move. Perhaps the craziest trade of the NBA trade deadline day.
Super exciting.
Super exciting. The Pelicans have traded Dante Cunningham to Brooklyn, to the Brooklyn Nets, for Rashad Vaughn, who was drafted by Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Okay, what does this move mean?
Rashad Vaughn.
I have something. What do you think this move means?
Rashad Vaughn's an interesting piece. I think he was drafted in the lottery to the Bucks. He was a first-round pick, I know for sure. It may have not been the lottery. It was probably mid-first-round pick. He's an athlete. I mean, he's probably going to be a 3-4 and maybe coming off the bench. He's underachieved on the offensive side, but we may see something that Gentry can develop him into a solid player.
He just wasn't a fit with Milwaukee.
No,
there.
Absolutely not. I mean, Dante Cunningham, I remember when in the offseason, we were pretty much fighting with, I believe, the Timberwolves to see who could sign this guy. But he's really underachieved for us this year. So sending him out the door must mean that we're ready to move on. I don't even think his contract was that bad. So I don't think this is a, you know, shredding contract move, shredding cap space. But I think it was a solid move for the Pelicans.
Okay. Here's what I think about this move. Dante Cunningham gets traded, you know, our small forward, mm-hmm. right? That must mean Solomon Hill is looking pretty darn good in his recovery.
That's a good thing.
That's what I think. It must mean Solomon Hill, they're pretty positive Solomon Hill is going to come back and contribute.
We need him back as soon as possible.
I think the Pelicans, you know, they think, all right, Solomon Hill, he'll be ready to go by the time, I think after the All-Star break is when you bring him back.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what that means, Solomon Hill. So a big part of this team is, you know, the shooting, right? Especially from that wing spot.
Mm-hmm.
Rashad Vaughn, 6'6". He could play the three.
Yeah.
You said he's athletic, too. I mean, he could play the three. Rashad Vaughn, in his last, let's say, this season so far, he's shooting 37% from three. Dante Cunningham was shooting 32%.
Okay.
Now, but it all comes down to games because Rashad Vaughn only played 22 games a season, only averaged 7.9 minutes per game, so he wasn't playing as much as Dante. But when he shot the three, 37%.
That's not bad.
That's not terrible. I got to look at the three-point attempts.
He's been really underwhelming for offensive output, but that's because he hasn't been getting minutes. Once he gets to the Pelicans, I think we'll give him some good minutes off the bench, see what he can do, if he can develop any. I think it's worth it. I think it's a low-risk trade. Dante Cunningham, as I said, was underperforming all year. I don't think he was a great defensive player. And, I mean, he wasn't hitting shots. Like, I'm pretty sure I've counted, you know, countless times when he's missed an open three for the Pelicans. So, I don't know. I don't like bad-talking Dante on his way out. But
I don't see Rashad Vaughn coming in and really contributing all that much.
I don't think so either.
I just think this means that Solomon Hill's going to come back and be impressive.
Which is definitely a good thing. We definitely need him back as soon as possible.
Yeah. So that was the trade deadline for the New Orleans Pelicans. And, you know, of course, the Cleveland Cavaliers had the biggest turnaround
unbelievable.
In like NBA history. With
they
their
got rid
deadline.
Of six players, I think, and
so.
A first round pick, and brought in four new players. So
Pelicans, you know, is there anyone from the Pelicans that you know was on the trading block that you wanted to see come to the Pelicans?
Well, I'd like to see Tyreke Evans come home.
Think so?
Yeah, I think he's having a great season. He's averaging like 20 a game almost for Memphis, and I mean he's having a great defensive season as well. I saw somewhere that if Tyreke Evans would have joined the Cavaliers, granted the Cavaliers are a terrible defensive team, but he would have automatically been the second best defensive player on that team. So just imagine what he would have been for the Pels, right? So I think it would have been nice to have him back as if at worst a bench player, right? But I think he would have been starting, maybe, you know, starting two or starting three, a ball handler, a solid ball handler that can score at any time in the game. I would have really liked to see him back.
Tyreke Evans' defense, you know, not talked about a lot. That defense could be part of the Memphis kind of culture or system, as you will. So you never know how well he would play in Cleveland or New Orleans. Interesting that you say Tyreke Evans back to the Pelicans.
I'll still take 20 a game.
Still take 20 a game,
yeah.
Especially with the Cousins' loss. All right, the Clippers are a half game out from the 8th seed from the Pelicans. Pelicans are one game from being the 6th seed. You still think the Pelicans are going to make the playoffs?
It's definitely gotten tighter, I'll tell you that. I think that there are a couple teams to look out for. The Jazz especially are coming up. I think the Clippers are still right there, but I'm not.
And then the
Jazz
just traded their team, though, or like some key parts to their team.
Rodney Hood, they traded Rodney Hood, but they still have the pieces there. You know, I think they're still going to be in the race. I think the Lakers now are going to try and make a run for the 8th seed, which is really interesting.
What are they? 9 games under 500.
They've been winning recently though, and having Isaiah Thomas on that team. If he can do something similar to what he did with Boston, that will be a nice run towards the playoffs for the Lakers.
They're 9 games under 500 right now.
This Pelicans team just needs to keep winning. And, I mean, we're not really seeing that.
Cannot rely on other teams losing.
No.
You need to win.
I think this team now needs to set a goal of wins for the season. And I think it needs to be close to 45.
Right.
Which is going to be really tight. But it's just the Western Conference is just so deep, top to bottom. And while you do say that they're, you know, a couple spots out of the 6th seed, and they're a couple spots out of the playoffs, from being out of the playoffs, they're in the worst possible position right now because they trade away their first-round pick, so they can't just, you know, tank.
They need to make the playoffs.
They need to make the playoffs. And, you know, they're really close to not making the playoffs. If they hadn't have traded their first-round pick, I'd be all for tanking and trying to get, you know, a top 10 maybe pick, and because this draft is loaded, this draft has so many good players,
right?
But now you got to try and make the playoffs, and it's going to be really tight. And
it's going to be tight.
The Pelicans just need to keep winning.
What percentage do you give them right now?
I mean, they're in the playoffs right now. Without Boogie, it really depends. Solomon Hill will be a nice addition back, as we've been talking
about.
It's
got to be like 50-50 that they make it.
It's going to be tight. I think
it's got to be 50-50.
It's pretty 50-50.
The next three games for the Pelicans before the much-needed NBA All-Star break are all on the road, starting with the 76ers, then the Nets on Saturday, and a revenge game for Rashard Vaughn already against the Nets on Saturday, and then the Pelicans. I don't know if Rashard Vaughn's going to be with the Pelicans on Saturday. Then the Pelicans play the Pistons on Monday, all before the All-Star break. How do these games go? How do they enter the All-Star break?
Well, the Pistons game, I'm not feeling great about because the Pistons have been playing great basketball ever since they got Blake Griffin.
5-0 since Blake.
The 76ers game is going to be a toss-up. The next game we need to pick up, but you know how we play against bad teams, right? So, optimistically, 2-1 would be good.
Okay.
Go into the break with 30 wins and feel good about yourself, even though you lost one of your All-Star players. You're still in the playoffs. You're still at 30 wins on the season, and I think you got to go from there. But worst case scenario, of course, is 0-3. I think if we go 0-3 in this stretch around the playoffs, I think that we could probably go 1-2, but 2-1 is definitely the best case scenario, in my opinion.
2-1. I like that. You don't have who are the two wins?
76ers and the Nets. 76ers win being the toss-up.
Not feeling good about the Pistons game.
I'm not feeling good about the Pistons either. I think Blake Griffin's, you know, having a rebirth with the Pistons. And they're playing great ball. I think Andre Drummond just had a 27-rebound night.
Right.
Or something ridiculous like that.
The Pistons will be on a back-to-back, though. They'll play at Atlanta. Again, Atlanta, you know. But they'll be at Atlanta on Sunday. Then they'll be at home to play the Pelicans.
That may make it a little more interesting. I mean, as we always say, the games we expect to lose are the games we win, and the games we expect to win are the ones we lose. So I wouldn't be shocked at all if we beat the Pistons and lost to, like, the Nets.
Right.
But, I mean, we'll see. I think we definitely need to pick up at least two games here to feel good about ourselves going into the All-Star break.
I like 2-1. You cannot be – you need 2-1. You cannot be 1-2 or 0-3.
If you go 0-3, your playoff chances just, you know, go through the floor.
The teams under you are playing too well for you to go 0-3 or 1-2.
What's the protection on the Bulls pick that we gave them? The Pelicans gave the Bulls pick.
I'm not sure.
I don't remember what it was.
Get our team of researchers on it. All right. That was the New Orleans Pelicans, the Vermillion Sports Show on KRVS 88.7 FM. The Super Bowl, the NFL honors, those happened last weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And we predicted the honors. We forgot about one award.
Yeah. I mean, it's the most forgettable award.
It is. I mean, just, I don't know. Anyway, it was the Offensive Player of the Year. New Orleans Saints running back Alvin Kamara won Offensive Rookie of the Year, while Marshawn Lattimore won Defensive Rookie of the Year, the first rookie teammates to win these awards since 1967.
Called it.
you called it.
I mean, it really wasn't, you know, that big of a stretch to call those two winning it. They both have great seasons. And I think that these are two players that we can really build on. And I'm totally discounting Ramchek. These are three great. And Marcus Williams.
Great
this
rookie
draft,
class.
This draft,
man,
was amazing.
You could not have done better.
These are
with the
four players
class
that you can build on for the future, right? And you can only keep building on top of that with another good draft class this year, which is going to be coming up soon. I'm really excited for them, for the NFL draft this season.
Oh, man, it's going to be exciting. Of course, we're going to cover that.
Mm.
Tom Brady won MVP.
Yeah.
Todd Gurley won Offensive Player of the Year. That's the one we forgot. And Aaron Donald received Defensive Player of the Year. Sean McVay won Coach of the Year for his job with the Los Angeles Rams. I think the only questionable one here, and you know, you could argue it may not be questionable, is Tom Brady winning MVP.
He had a great season.
It's just questionable to me because I would have liked to see Gurley win.
That's why there's the Offensive Player of the Year, though. I feel like the MVP,
I cannot.
The MVP award is like basically a quarterback award, I feel.
Yeah, it is.
It only goes to quarterbacks. And
that's why it would have been so nice to see Todd Gurley win.
It would have definitely. I think Gurley deserved it. I said in my pick for MVP was Gurley. But, I mean, he still got the recognition with Offensive Player of the Year. They could have easily given that to Antonio Brown. In my opinion, I think that they should have done that, given the Offensive Player of the Year to Antonio Brown and given Gurley the MVP. But it's okay. I think that Gurley did get the recognition by getting that reward. I think Sean McVay getting Coach of the Year really, you know, allowed people to recognize what he did with that Rams team.
I think he's the youngest coach in the NFL. Could be.
He turned the offense just 180. Their offense was, I think, 31st in the league last year, and I think they were top in the league this past year. So, I mean, that Jared Goff had great development. That may have been due to McVay. And they just had a really solid season. I think they're going to be up there in the NFC West for years to come.
Right. I mean, the Tom Brady winning the MVP, I mean, Tom Brady, you know.
Yeah, it's Tom Brady.
Tom Brady.
He had a great season. He led the league in passing at age 40. So, I mean, it's definitely deserved. I just would have liked to see Gurley
win. I just don't
like
that stipulation at the end of it, like at age 40 or for his age, you know.
He's old. I mean, he's defined.
Regardless,
like,
of age, he still had a great season.
Exactly. Like, you look at quarterbacks that hit age 40 and they start to hit a wall. Brady, I think, had one of his best seasons this past year, and he's still, you know, he's doing great.
And speaking of Tom Brady, a day after the NFL honors, we got an amazing Super Bowl. I think it was an amazing Super Bowl.
I really enjoyed it.
These past few Super Bowls have been great.
Yeah, I mean, the only bad one in recent memory was that Seahawks Broncos one.
Seahawks and Broncos. That was the worst one.
Forgettable.
In recent years, yeah. And Aaron was right. He's definitely redeeming himself for some pretty bad predictions, if you're listening. Anyway, Aaron, good job. You guessed it. The Eagles won 41-33. They defeated the New England Patriots to win Super Bowl 52. Quarterback Nick Foles won Super Bowl MVP for his performance.
Charlie, and he's going to Disney World.
And he's going to, man, I would like to go to Disney
World. I want to go to Disney World.
Disney World's awesome. Absolutely. I need to win a Super Bowl. Charlie, thoughts on the game, man?
It was actually a lot better than I expected. Yes. I predicted an 8-point game, so I got that just the other way around.
I'll give you credit, Charlie. Good job. Thank you. The spread right.
I got the spread. I think Nick Foles had a great game. I think the receivers as well, like Alshon Jeffrey and, you know, Nelson Agholor had good games for him. Zach Ertz is a great tight end for the Eagles. They had a really good game. The Patriots, Tom Brady put up over 500 yards and they still lost. That defense, no bueno.
All on the defense.
I honestly put it all on the defense. It's funny though, because I was talking when they had a little over a minute left to go in the game and they still, you know, could drive down the field and, you know, take the lead, because the Eagles were only up 5 at that point. So they could have driven down the field and take the lead. But Brady got stripped and sacked. I pretty much was 80% sure that he was going to go down the field and win the game.
That's what everyone thought.
Exactly.
When he got the ball with 2:23 left, everyone was certain he was going to drive down the field and win the game.
One defensive play made that game. And it's crazy.
And the Eagles play bad defense.
You look at the offensive
great defense, and they play bad defense.
You look at that offensive production from both teams. I think they combined for over 1,100 yards, right?
The most combined yards,
right?
In a single game in NFL history, I believe.
Yeah. So I mean, if you look at that, and then one defensive play really decided the game, it's pretty crazy.
It was one defensive play, one. That's
all it took.
You know, and great offense by the Eagles. The
The
Philly
trick play.
Special, yeah. The Philly special on fourth and goal, amazing. Nick Foles called that himself. He called that play.
I heard about that.
Yeah,
that's pretty funny.
He went up to Doug Peterson and he's like, "Philly special," and Doug Peterson thought for a second, looking at his playbook. He was like, "Yeah, let's run it. Yeah, he's like, "Let's run it," and then amazing call. And that was 30 minutes after Tom Brady drops his pass.
Right,
Tom Brady.
I saw something pretty funny that said former Louisiana high school coaches are now undefeated in the Super Bowl against Super Bowl winning coaches, because Doug Peterson used to coach high school in Louisiana.
Right. Great. It was a great Super Bowl, man. I was just happy to witness a good game.
Yeah, absolutely.
Part of me was just worried it was going to be a blowout.
I didn't think it was going to be a blowout. I just thought it was going to be kind of boring.
I predicted it close, but, you know, there's always that kind of worry with these big games that you don't want blowouts.
I just kind of felt,
the NBA Finals, you don't want to sweep.
Especially after the Eagles game against the Vikings, I knew that they were going to come in hot against the Patriots, so I didn't think it was going to be like a blowout necessarily. I just thought that the Eagles weren't going to play as well as they did, which was very shocking to me to see them put 41 on the Patriots.
Right, a 41, man, 41 points.
Unbelievable.
All the talk about the defense. Nick Foles comes in, has an amazing performance, and it's well-deserved for the Philadelphia Eagles, their first Super Bowl win in franchise history, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah, it's the first one.
All right, the Super Bowl, that came with commercials. I have my standout commercial.
And I agree with it.
And you agree with it?
I agree with it.
It's the best commercial of Super Bowl. It was Eli Manning and Odell Beckham Jr. dancing, the Dirty Dancing commercial. What were they promoting?
I don't even remember.
I don't remember. I just remember them dancing, the whole choreographed dance, and then him, Odell, running up to Eli Manning.
I can't even remember
what they were promoting.
I just remember the commercial being hilarious.
Great commercial. Were there any other standout commercials?
Not really, honestly. Like, I can't really remember many other commercials from Super Bowl Sunday. I thought a lot of them were pretty forgettable, but that one definitely stood out.
That one. Past Super Bowl commercials, the Doritos one with the little kid, he's like, don't put your hands on my Doritos and don't put your hands on my mama when he slapped him like that. Great commercial.
Okay.
Great. I know you're like, Lewis.
Wasn't there one that was like a time travel one with Doritos?
That one was good. Doritos has great commercials.
Yeah, they do.
I mean, Eli and OBJ had the best commercial.
I'm looking up what they were trying to promote right now.
We need to find out.
I don't know. I don't think it was a promotion for anything.
It was kind of like an NFL commercial. Check out. You know what? It was only fitting that was the best commercial of two NFL players dancing with all the great NFL celebration, touchdown celebration.
I think it was just a joke commercial. I don't think it was even promoting anything.
Okay, well, then that makes sense. But do you agree with that?
What's that?
You know, it's only fitting that was the best commercial because of all the NFL touchdown celebrations we had this year. You know, definitely. It was just a fun year.
Right.
After, you know, celebration. So it was only fitting that was the one that stood out the most.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Let's go back to the Saints real quick. The Saints are sixth in the Vegas odds to win Super Bowl 53. Whoa, Lewis, you're looking ahead early. I'm just looking at it. Vegas odds, they have the Saints sixth that behind the Patriots, Eagles, Steelers, Vikings, and Packers to win Super Bowl 53. Do you think the Saints have a better shot at the Super Bowl next year than any of the teams in front of them right now?
It's maybe the Vikings.
Because you never know what happens in the offseason.
You don't at all. And, I mean, this is just a guesstimate. Because free agency hasn't happened, the draft hasn't happened. Who knows? Maybe we can get another really good draft class. I'm not expecting anything like the one we had this year.
Yeah, just looking at situations right now, do the Saints have a better shot than any of those teams?
I think the Vikings, in my opinion, because the Packers are coming back with a healthy Aaron Rodgers. And I think the Packers, with a healthy Aaron Rodgers, have a much better shot at winning that division than the Vikings do. That's just my opinion. I think that one player is so important to that team that he just puts them over the edge. As far as, you know, I think the Eagles are going to be right back there.
You think so?
They're returning all their players. Carson Wentz is healthy again. The Eagles are interesting because now it comes down to what do they do with Nick Foles.
That's what I was about to ask. What do you think they do with
Nick
Foles?
He has an interesting contract because he signed a 5-year extension with them recently. But if he's playing in February like he was this year, again next year, then he can void the final 3 years of his contract and become a free agent, which is kind of interesting. But I think that I could see the Eagles trading him potentially to another team for nice assets. But I think Carson Wentz is definitely their quarterback of the future.
It is Carson Wentz. But I think you have to keep Nick Foles. And, you know, Nick Foles he's a really humble guy. Great speech after the Super Bowl about, you know, when you struggle, that's when your character grows.
Yeah.
Great speech. You know, he might want to start somewhere, though. After winning a Super Bowl, do you think that?
Maybe
he's a pretty cool guy though. I think he'll be okay.
He'll always be a legend in Philly. Yeah. You know, like he won them their first Super Bowl. So,
I think, you know, here's the thing: you keep Carson Wentz, that's your quarterback, but you keep Nick Foles just in case. You never know what Wentz is going to look like after the ACL.
Hmm.
I think you just keep him around because a backup quarterback can do a lot. And a Super Bowl winning, Super Bowl MVP backup quarterback, that's the best situation you could get right there. So, I mean, why trade that? Because you never know what Carson Wentz is going to look like.
Yeah, I mean, they have plenty of time to decide what they want to do. The Patriots, I think, are going to be right back there as well. They retained their offensive coordinator who really fleeced the Colts. You know, it was
really
so funny because I saw the Colts GM afterwards said the rivalry is back on or something. Like, what rivalry?
No,
like,
no.
The Colts are awful. Like, the Colts are a top three pick this year, and the Patriots are coming off their, you know, second straight Super Bowl appearance. So I don't think there's anything there.
The thing is, he looked serious when he said the rivalry is back on, then he walked off. But
everyone's
kind of
joking about it.
We're laughing, and everyone was joking about
it. It's pretty funny.
He looked pretty serious.
Yeah.
About that statement. I don't. There's no rivalry there.
The Steelers are a year older. Big Ben's a year closer to retiring, so we'll see how they do. It's interesting to see if Ryan Shazier will come back eventually.
I think he just regained feeling in his legs. You know, that's just going to be a tough injury to come
absolutely.
Back from, you know,
but I mean, he's standing now.
I'm glad he's doing better.
Hey, that injury could have been so much worse, and I'm just happy that he's okay.
They fired their offense coordinator.
Todd Haley. I think that's a good move for them.
It's a good move. It's an improvement.
I feel like he was overrated as an offensive coordinator because he has so much talent on that offense. I think as an offensive coordinator by himself, he wasn't really that good. I think the Packers are an interesting team next year because, of course, they have Aaron Rodgers. But the rest of their team is, like, you know, not really stands out.
Yeah, you saw it when Hundley was back there.
Right.
That the Packers just, you know, don't cut it without Aaron Rodgers.
With Aaron Rodgers, though, they're always in the playoffs. So,
Aaron Rodgers, man, great quarterback. So, you think the Saints have a better shot than which teams?
It really depends, again, on what they do in free agency. They got to keep Breeze. I think they one big signing they need to keep is Alex Okafor, the defensive end. He's a great player for us. He had a great season. I would love to keep him. And Senio Calamente, that offensive lineman that we have, I would love to keep him as well. He's great for depth. And the offensive lineman, like when the offensive line was healthy the whole year, they were great.
Great.
But there's so many injuries on that line. Like, we just need that kind of depth. And I thought Senio was great at that. So those are the three free agents I really want the Saints to keep. I think Kenny Vaccaro is expendable, in my opinion. I agree with that. I don't want to pay him big bucks, so I'm okay with
that. You think he demands big bucks?
Probably.
You think so?
Probably.
Hmm.
He's going into the prime of his career. He's probably going to ask for a lot of money, and I don't really want to pay it to him. So when it
turns out, oh, what were you going to say?
When it comes down to it, it really, I think the draft this year will, you know, kind of coincide with how we do in free agency. If we get a good wide receiver in free agency, I don't think we're going to get a wide receiver early in the draft. I think we're going to go after defense in the draft if that happens. But if there's one player that we definitely need another solid wide receiver.
So. Okay.
Yeah, to go alongside Ginn and Thomas. So something to
look for.
Make that
offense really
and a good tight end
impactful.
As well. I think a good tight end we could find through the draft, though.
I think so. You could get them later in the draft. I mean,
fourth round pick would be fine.
Plenty of talent there. And I just want to say this. Turns out, Malcolm Butler should have just came to the Saints.
You know, it's funny people say that because Kane Crawley was actually better rated as a cornerback this year than Malcolm Butler.
Just for Malcolm Butler, you know.
Think about that for a second.
It just
though.
Really sucks that he didn't play in the Super Bowl besides special teams.
He's probably going to be back in New England, though. If he isn't back and he wants to come to New Orleans for kind of cheap, I think he'd be a great option. But I don't want to overpay him either. I think there's more options that we need to take care of first. As I said, those three names are huge in free agency. And then move on and have a good draft. I think we'll be right there again.
So the postseason, the after-the-season Saints, very optimistic.
I would say.
Very, very positive.
After having a great season like this and coming so close to the NFC Championship, you got to be optimistic. I think another year with these rookie players, you know, I think it will help their development. I think they'll get even better next year.
Oh, yeah.
Which is crazy to think about because of how good they were this year. I'm super excited to see this team next year. I'm just ready for football to be back.
But, you know, Charlie, you have baseball.
I do have baseball.
You do have baseball.
I do have baseball.
You know, some people after the Super Bowl, they're like, now it's baseball season.
Yeah.
So when does baseball season start?
50 days from now.
50 days. I mean,
well, 50 days from yesterday.
He's got the countdown ready.
Because they had, I saw a couple posts on Instagram actually with Mookie Betts, the player for the Red Sox. His number's 50. They're like 50 days till the opening day. And opening day is opening night with my Astros versus the Yankees. So
that's going to be fun. Exciting. I mean, we're probably going to talk about the Houston Astros on here.
Cajuns baseball as well
Cajuns
is coming up. I'm excited
next
for that.
Week. Yeah. Their first home series isn't until 2 weeks from now. But a lot of exciting things happening. And that will do it for myself and Charlie this week at the Vermillion Sports Show on KRBS 88.7. Thank you for talking sports with me, as always, Charlie.
Absolutely.
I hope you had a great time, man.
Yeah, it was. It was a good show.
And if you missed any part of the show, you can listen to it online at krvs.org. You can hear us talk sports every Thursday at midnight, technically Friday. Wake up at midnight. Stay up late on Thursday. Start your Friday with some sports programming on KRVS. Comes to you each week through the generous support of listeners like you and the University of Louisiana at Lafayette. Thank you for listening.